Hello and welcome to the Mr. Brown podcast, where I reflect on my journey as an early career teacher, with a special focus on mental health. I am your host, James Brown. It's been a while since we last spoke. 5 weeks, in fact, during which time most of the summer holidays have been and gone. I have done some preparation for next year, my first year as an early career teacher, an ECT. I completed the unit assessments, all of them, for each of the maths classes that I'll be teaching next year. That was just to ensure that my subject knowledge was where it needed to be, and it didn't take too long. I have also taught myself the computer science that I will be teaching next year. So next year I'll be teaching 15 hours of maths and 3 hours of computer science. I've also done some reading. So in September I'll be starting a master's in character education. I thought now was a good time to do a master's for several reasons. The first was that during my PGCE, there was an element of studying. You spent 1 day a week in university, and you had to submit university essays every so often. So I'm already in the habit of studying. So I thought I might as well continue that habit whilst it's there. And I thought that the longer I leave it before doing a master's in education, the less likely it would become that I'd ever end up doing it. So my teaching timetable would increase and I would no doubt be taking on additional responsibilities, all of which would reduce the amount of time that I'd be able to spend studying. So yes, I'm starting a master's in September and I did some reading this summer holiday in preparation. And you may be thinking, but it's the summer holidays, why haven't you been relaxing and enjoying yourself? Well, the work that I've done, I have done just in a few hours each morning. And I felt that doing a few hours of work each morning was enough to sustain my sense of purpose. If I do nothing but relax, I can't relax because I feel a little bit aimless and my anxiety can start to creep up. I need something to focus on, so that I can enjoy the rest when I'm resting. So yes, I did some work each morning. And then for 2 weeks, I went on holiday to Turkey, during which time I did rest entirely. I did not take my laptop with me. But I'm back from holiday now. It is 1 week before the start of term, my first term as an early career teacher. And I have started to get the ECT jitters. I'm worried, basically, at the thought of being a full-time teacher. Well, I say I'm worried. It doesn't seem to manifest when I'm awake. I don't feel too worried at all. But I have been having some odd dreams. Nightmares, you'd probably call them. And not every night. I'd say I've only had a couple. But enough to make me think, okay, there's clearly some worry floating around in the back of my mind here. And usually these nightmares are to do with being required to teach a lesson, teach a topic that I myself don't understand. So I'm trying to teach something that I don't know and I'm failing and it's horrible, which I guess is probably the ultimate fear of any teacher. And I don't think I'm the only one with the ECT jitters. I have a teacher Twitter account where I follow lots of other teachers, early career teachers, NQTs, trainee teachers also. And it seems to be a fairly widespread phenomena. People do seem to be quite worried ahead of their first year as an early career teacher. And away from Twitter, I've had a colleague contact me who will also be an early career teacher next year, to express similar sorts of worries. So since this podcast has a continuing special focus on mental health, I thought I would devote an entire episode, this episode, to talking about the ECT jitters. Now, the first thing to note, if you are one of the many teachers who's feeling anxious ahead of your first year as an ECT, is that you are indeed one among many. I think this alone can often be quite a comforting thought, the thought that you are not alone. You're in good company. It is normal to feel anxious. In fact, I would say that you should worry more if you weren't feeling anxious, because feeling anxious confirms that you care about what you're doing. And if you don't care about teaching, then you really shouldn't be teaching. So I think it's perfectly healthy to experience these sorts of nerves and anxieties ahead of your first year as a teacher. So what I thought I might do to begin is compare my PGCE year, so that was my teacher training year last year, with my upcoming ECT year, my first year as a qualified teacher. So during my PGCE year, I built up to teaching around 13 hours a week. From next week, however, in my ECT year, I will be teaching 19 hours a week. Now, that's still not a full teaching timetable. In your first year as an ECT, you have a 10% reduction. In your second year, you have a 5% reduction. So I'm still operating on a reduced timetable. But even so, it is 6 hours more teaching a week than I experienced last year during my training year, which may seem worrying. That said, last year, I spent much of the year having one day a week in university and only 4 days a week in school. From next year, it will be 5 days a week in school. So granted, it's 6 hours more teaching per week, but I also have an entire extra day in school per week. And generally speaking, you no longer have to worry about university. If you did a PGCE, you would have been writing university essays alongside learning how to teach in the classroom. No more essays. Granted, for me, I am going straight into doing a master's, but it's far more flexible than my PGCE was, and it's going to be taking course slowly and gradually over 3 years part-time. But generally speaking, you'll no longer have university essays to worry about, so that's one less drain on your time. So the point I'm trying to make here is that even though you have 6 extra hours of teaching a week or thereabouts, you also have lots more time in the week to deal with that increased workload. An extra day a week in school and all of the time that you would have spent working towards university assignments has now been freed up. So I don't think that the increase in workload is itself a great cause for concern. I also feel that during the PGCE year, we made the single greatest jump that we will ever make in our teaching careers. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm talking about the jump from 0 hours teaching to some teaching. The leap from doing no teaching at all to doing some teaching is the single greatest leap that you'll ever have to make in your teaching career. So I believe, anyway. That was the hardest thing, and we've already done it. So the increase from 13 hours a week teaching to 19 hours a week teaching is nothing by comparison, because we're just doing 6 hours more of something that we're already doing. And it's also important to remember that as an ECT, we will continue to enjoy mentor meetings. I think the requirement is that our mentor observe us teach for at least 15 minutes a week and gives us feedback for at least 45 minutes a week. So those mentor meetings that we got used to during our training year will continue into our ECT year. And so that support is there should we start to struggle in any regard. I think another benefit when we compare our ECT year to our PGCE year is that we'll be staying in one school. During my PGCE, I was in one school from September to Christmas, and then from January to the summer, I was in a different school. The upheaval was considerable, and it took a while to settle back down into the routines and rhythms of a new school. This year, won't have to worry about any of that. We'll be in the same school from September until the summer. So I think that when we compare the upcoming ECT year, the first year as a fully qualified teacher, when we compare that year to our previous year as a trainee, I think it compares favourably. I'm trying to make the argument that if you survived your PGCE year, your first year as an ECT shouldn't cause you too much concern. That said, anxiety isn't always something that you can just reason your way out of. But there are some strategies that you can employ that, in the moment, can reduce the symptoms of anxiety. Now, this may be peculiar to me, but there's something that I like to remind myself of whenever I feel anxious about teaching next year. I remind myself that less competent people than me have made very good teachers. Now, that's not to say that I am exceptionally competent. I don't think that's the case. But statistically speaking, it is highly likely that I am not the least competent person to ever try teaching. And the same goes for you. Out there somewhere, there is someone who is less competent than you, but who has become a fantastic teacher. So the idea is that if they can do it, then so can I. I find that that thought can often help reduce my anxiety. But there are some other strategies. So, the first, confront whatever it is that frightens you. And another strategy is journaling. So I mentioned these two together because I think that they can work together. So I said confront whatever it is that frightens you. Now, if you're like me, what frightens me is the thought of being required to teach a lesson that I don't know myself. How on earth can I confront that experience? Well, hopefully, I will never have to confront that experience. Hopefully, that will never become a reality. But I can confront it in my imagination. I can actually think about what it would be like to be in that situation. And a really helpful tool for structuring these sorts of imaginative explorations is journaling. Write down what it is you're afraid of. What's the worst thing that could happen? How would you react in that situation? Now, you may object here that would just make things worse. What we really need to do is to focus on the positives and to remain positive, and to think happy thoughts, go to our happy place, and to deal with the anxiety that way. I would argue that that's not the right way to go about it for several reasons. First of all, too much positive thinking can actually rob you of the motivation to do whatever it is you're thinking about doing. Okay, what on earth does that mean? Say if I want to win the gold medal for the 100 meters freestyle at the Olympics. The reason I've chosen this as an example is because I first heard about the dangers of positive thinking in another podcast called The Happiness Lab, which I will link in the show notes. And in the episode I'm thinking of, they spoke about Michael Phelps, who is a famous swimmer, and the mental preparation that he puts in before the big competitions. Okay, so I want to win the gold medal in the 100 meters freestyle, much like Michael Phelps. So suppose that I only visualize the positives. I picture myself on the podium receiving the gold medal, and everything that I've ever wished for comes true. Now, the brain can struggle to distinguish between reality and imagination. So, imagining myself on the podium can make me feel as good as if I was actually standing on the podium in reality. And in this way, imagining only the positive aspects of the experience that you want to make a reality can actually rob you of motivation to make it a reality. Because in a way, you've already experienced it in your imagination. Now, how does this apply to teaching? So if you're experiencing anxiety about next year, about your first year of being a teacher, and you want to find some strategy to help manage that anxiety, only focusing on the positive aspects of next year, so imagining the best possible year that you could have, could in fact rob you of the motivation to make that year a reality. That could happen. So that's one reason not to focus only on the positives. Now, another reason to think about the negatives, think about what could go wrong, is that if you've already imagined the worst case scenario, then should you ever find yourself in that scenario, however unlikely it might be, you will actually be better equipped emotionally to deal with it, because you've already ran it through in your head. You've already experienced the associated emotions. For Michael Phelps, he would imagine losing his goggles at the start of a race and having to compete blind. And sure enough, that did happen on one occasion, but because he'd imagined it happening so many times, it didn't come as a shock or a surprise. He just did what he knew he needed to do. Similarly, if you confront in your imagination the worst case scenario of being required to teach a lesson that you know nothing about, then should that ever happen, in reality, you'll be better equipped to deal with the situation. You'll have already experienced all those horrible negative emotions to some extent via your imagination, and so if it happens in real life, you'll be able to deal with it better. So, to repeat, if you're feeling anxious about your first year as a teacher next year, don't forget that you've already done the hardest part. You went from no teaching to some teaching during your training year. That was a much greater leap than going from 13 hours teaching to 19 hours teaching. You've already done the hardest part. Remember also that somewhere out there, someone far less competent than you has made a very good teacher. So if they can do it, so can you. Think also about the worst case scenario, because if you consider the worst case scenario, it's highly likely that any bad experiences next year will fall short of that worst case scenario. And should that worst case scenario become a reality, then you will be better equipped emotionally to deal with it. So I think these are some general thoughts and strategies that can help with the anxiety of becoming an early career teacher. I know that they help me, so perhaps they can help you too. last but not least, remind yourself why you started this journey. Why did you get into teaching? Whatever it was, that fire of motivation burned bright enough to sustain you through your teacher training. Now, the flame may have dwindled a little bit since, especially over the summer holidays. So remind yourself, why have you done it? Why did you get into this profession? Throw some fuel on the fire. For me, I became a teacher because I wanted to master something that was very important. And I feel that this would give me a sense of meaning and purpose in my life. And it has. So despite never having been so stressed in my life, my mental health has never been more robust. So I hope this episode may have helped you unpack some of the ECT jitters. It certainly helped me. So I did mention that journaling could be a good way to go. This podcast for me is a sort of journal. So if you don't want to write, perhaps you could speak instead. And speak with other people. You don't have to speak to yourself like I do and record it and publish it for others to listen to. That's not required at all, but just go and talk with anyone. That can also be a good way to help you unpack some of these anxieties and help them dissolve somewhat. And before you go, just a reminder about my Patreon page. So during term time, I try to release 2 episodes of the podcast a month. Each episode takes me around 3 hours. So that's 6 hours or so that I put into this podcast each month. If you think that work is worth at least the price of a coffee each month, so £2 or £3, then please consider becoming a patron, because that small financial contribution will help me cover the costs of producing this podcast, which currently stand at around £14 per month. Okay, so school starts next week, and you can expect another episode in maybe a couple of weeks' time. I may try to do a couple more before school starts. We'll see. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word in person and on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at MrBrownPod or email MrBrownPod@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate and review in your directory of choice. Please also consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/MrBrownPod and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. Thank you, and talk again soon.